We are joined by Jeff O'Brien. He is an attorney, a lawyer, and a barrister extraordinaire with Chestnut Cambrone. And Jeff, as I'd want your legal opinion. So was Meghan Markle a victim or vindictive in that interview? Because the more I think about it, there was never any reason for that even to take place unless she wanted to skewer the royal family and the queen.
Yeah, I agree. I think she's vindictive. I think that a lot of this is my take on it is the clash between cultures. You know, you've got an American actress who was raised here under the participation trophy generation.
Yep.
And coming to marrying into the royal family and being the spouse of sixth in line, or the guy who's sixth in line, doesn't give you a whole lot of say in anything. And I think that she bristled under that. And that's what led to what they call Megxit.
Yep.
And that's what led to, and now she's going to try to get her pound of flesh against the royals now for not giving her what she thought was her proper say. So I definitely think that this was vindictive on her part to say what she said last night
now,
to do that interview.
You said sixth in line, so that is his father would be first in line, his brother would be second in line. His brother has three kids, I'm guessing.
Yep.
That's what makes him sixth in line?
Yep, 3-4. Yep, because they changed the rules, so Charlotte stays in the line of succession. So it's 3-4-5, and then Harry is 6.
Well, it would take a catastrophe for him to move up the... But now, because of what he's done, he's not sixth in line, right? Because he's removed himself from that.
Correct.
And his kid, they wouldn't give the kid any place in line. So it skips to probably some cousin or something. I don't really care. And it's just this Meghan Markle, she has him under a spell. You know, Harry, he's going along with everything she says. But... Yeah, to each their own. Love is interesting. We'll leave it that way. You mentioned, by the way, when you were talking about Meghan, a participation trophy. If only the Timberwolves could make the NBA do that so that then they're more on equal footing. They just over a week ago, they surpassed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as the team in all sports, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, any sport you come up with the worst all-time winning percentage. And that really is a model of consistency when you think about it, to be that bad for that long.
Yeah, and you know that Glenn Taylor's got the team up for sale. And last week we had the controversy with Kevin Garnett saying he was out from the bidding and then Taylor saying he never submitted a bid and Taylor insisting on keeping the team here rather than having him, you know, because he's got a lot of bidders if you want to take him and move him to Seattle. You know, it's not a good time for men's basketball and in the Twin Cities. You've got the Wolves consistently bad. Richard Pitino is on the cusp of getting fired at the U of M. I think that he's already been told that hinted that to his players that he's probably not going to be with them much longer. And all I can say is thank God for St. Thomas going to Division I so we can get some good basketball in this town for a while.
Did they wind up winning the conference? The conference tournament?
I think.
I gotta check that.
The Tommies?
Yeah.
I don't think that's.
They just ended their regular season.
You know, beating St. John's.
Okay, so their regular season is just ending. All right. Anyway, the thing about Pitino, he's a goner. There's no question in my mind about that. And as for the Wolves, Kevin Garnett doesn't have the money to buy the Wolves. I think he just wants.
Right.
He wants Taylor to just give it to him. Maybe because Taylor gave him so many millions over his career, he just figures he's entitled to it. So he needs to stop whining. And you know what? Get some. What he should do is go to Jeff Bezos' ex-wife, who's worth what $56 billion. She just remarried, so that guy was like, I think, a chemistry teacher at some private school. So he just suddenly got some dough in his pocket. So go to her and say, hey, make a charitable donation. She's dedicated, by the way, to giving half her money to charities. So he should somehow turn it into a 501(c)(3). Turn it into that, or 501(c)(3).
C3?
Yeah. Make it a charitable organization. And then he would be absolutely fine with that. Now, I want to ask you about Governor Cuomo. Five women, at the moment, have come out and said he sexually harassed them. He even has the leaders in his New York Senate saying he needs to step down. He's refusing to step down. He must think he can just get away with it the way the guy in Virginia did with that blackface photo.
Yep.
You know, where one guy's in blackface, the other one's in the KKK hood. And I'm shocked that Northam got away with it. That's the guy, the governor, Governor Northam in Virginia. It just went away. So he probably figures this will just go away.
Well, I think why it's not going away, Bob, is because, you know, the harassment allegations, not to minimize them, but they're being used to call for his resignation as kind of a way of diverting attention from the real reason that he should be forced to resign, which is the horrible policy he had of putting sick COVID patients into nursing homes and then covering up how many seniors they actually killed in the nursing homes by doing that. Because, of course, that has implications for a few other Democrat governors, Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan, and our own Tim Walz, who did the same thing.
So did Murphy and Jersey.
They didn't, to my knowledge, they didn't do the cover-up, but the policy itself. And so it's an easier sell for the Democrats to run him out on a rail on the harassment stuff to cover up for the real crime here, which is the handling of the COVID patients.
It's reprehensible that he covered it up, but it's also reprehensible that he put people with COVID-19 into facilities where our most vulnerable population lived, the elderly. And you're Walz, how do you justify that? It's unjustifiable. It's disgusting because they claim they're doing everything to protect people from COVID, yet they made a decision to kill off the elderly. And we knew when this was happening, and it was outrageous then, yet it continued. And I just don't understand why all politicians in the state, because there's a legislature here, why they stood for it and why they didn't overthrow his executive order and his executive powers, which he still has, right? That hasn't changed.
Well, he still does have the emergency powers. Well, the reason they didn't do it is, you know, you've got a virus that, for the general population, the survival rate is very, very high. It's like 99.7%. The most vulnerable population, the seniors, are who are affected the most. So if you were looking to have bad numbers because you were in an election year because you wanted to get the orange man out, do this. I mean, I can't think of any other – there's no rational explanation as to why they would do something so stupid.
Well, you know what? They should go to jail life, and that would be letting them off easy if they used the election as their motivating factor to kill people and make the numbers look worse. That would be – beyond reprehensible. And it makes the blood boil if that were even on the table. And who makes the decision, who calls the shot to tell all these Democratic, because they're all Democratic governors who did this, I believe, just do it. You know what? Let's put the elderly in, sick people with COVID, with elderly people in these care facilities. Somebody was making that decision. Who was it? We don't know. We'll never know.
I don't know, but this was the problem with the way that, you know, a lot of the media here and a lot of folks will give Governor Walz credit for his handling of the COVID crisis. All he really did was, I mean, if you watch it, whenever Governor Newsom in California or Governor Cuomo in New York would do something, a few days later, Walz would do it here. So, you know, he was kind of just taking his cues from, you know, other governors because he doesn't have an original thought. He's not a leader. He's never been an executive before, and so he was just following, and he followed a bad policy.
You know what, Jeff? Well, you and I had that discussion way back when, you know, we were wondering, well, what's he going to do? Well, he'll just look at what the other governors are doing, and he'll fall in line, and he did. It's going to be interesting. I don't see how the Republicans can blow this when they run someone for governor, except they don't. If they put up a nice guy, but if they put up like a Jeff Johnson again, who's very milquetoast, they got no shot. But if anyone paying attention,
the latest name that I've heard was Hugh Hewitt on the, you know, as a conservative media guy, has a podcast. Last week he was tweeting out that he was going to have on his show the future governor of Minnesota, Pete Stauber, and there's been a lot of rumors about that, whether or not Pete's going to get in the race. That would be an interesting candidate if Pete decided to, because, you know, we're going to lose a seat in redistricting, and it's probably going to come from, you're either going to have 7, 8, or 6 somehow are going to get combined into two districts. So someone between Stauber, Emmer, and Michelle Fischbach is going to be the odd person out. So I would not be surprised to see that happen. It would be it would be better than a lot of the other names that have been bandied about out there.
Well, if it is Stauber, he certainly has name recognition in the Twin Cities, but more because of his brother Rob Stauber. But he did win up in the in Duluth, where an area where it's been Democratic for quite a while. If Emmer winds up losing his district, then he probably would be the one running. So you're right; it could be one or the other. And who is the other one you mentioned that could be out?
Michelle Fischbach.
Okay, I don't see her running for governor, but Emmer, I think, wants to keep what he has because he took a lot of credit for getting so many Republicans.
Well, yeah,
elected.
They overperformed in the House elections this last year, and they have a really good shot with redistricting in because Republicans control majority of state legislatures for redistricting coming up here. They have a very good shot at taking majority in the House. Pete, I saw news, you know, I know Pete because, of course, I represent his brother, Rob.
Yeah.
And friends with Rob and both of them, actually. And I saw Pete was on a picket line in St. Paul about a month or so ago. And I'm like, congressman from the 8th district doesn't do that. A candidate for governor does.
That's a good point. Yeah, he probably is thinking about it. All right. Well, Jeff, as always, greatly appreciate it. Jeff O'Brien, our lawyer, attorney, barrister extraordinaire from Chestnut Cambrone. Jeff, thanks so much. Take a quick break. The BS Show will be right back.